Although a lot of people have made the switch to electric vehicles, many gas-powered cars are likely to remain on the road for a while. Some old cars still have many years of life left, and some drivers will still choose to buy gas-powered cars. But those drivers can still take steps to save fuel and reduce planet-warming carbon pollution. That starts with considering the fuel efficiency of the car you choose to drive. Generally, smaller and lighter cars tend to be more fuel efficient than bigger and heavier cars. And how you drive also makes a difference. For example, accelerating slowly from a stop can help save gas. And when driving on the highway, using cruise control can help you maintain a steady speed, which helps your car get better gas mileage. Cars tend to be most efficient below approximately 60 miles per hour, and they become less efficient as speed increases. So avoiding high speeds can also help save on gas. Finally, maintaining proper tire pressure and keeping the engine in good working condition can help a car run more efficiently. So with a few simple steps, even people who drive gas-powered cars can save money on fuel and limit some of their global warming pollution. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You've been tuned into the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 3rd, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we do encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our producer and engineer for tonight's broadcast is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Eric Galatas, Terry D., Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, Barbara Bernstein, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is also Althea Billings. A podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're tuned in to KBOO on KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM, K2A2 BH Philomath at 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ron Bronson.
And I'm Danny Shy. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined today by Jonathan Ticini, longtime labor and progressive organizational and economic strategist. You might also know him from running for city council in District 2. We're here to talk about his opinion piece published in the Portland Mercury last month called Homelessness is Economics. We can't have a serious conversation about homelessness until we address wages. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
It's always great to be here with you.
Thank you so much for stopping by. So, sure. Yeah, I want to get into this opinion piece of yours to start out here. What inspired you to write it?
I think it was inspired to write it precisely for the reason you mentioned, which is I ran for city council and great experience. I got to talk to thousands of people. And obviously, one of the issues that was on people's minds when I knocked on doors, I knocked on almost 12,000 doors personally, was homelessness. And in connection with that, at the same time, there were about 100 candidates running roughly in all four districts. And everybody was trying to be the best person on homelessness and be uber caring about that. And there were some people who basically ran their whole campaign anchored on the whole notion that they had particular experience in homelessness, either personally had experienced it or they had worked in that field and that area. And what troubled me was, and I think we'll find out, we'll talk a little bit about why. What troubled me was that almost every candidate, with the exception of yours truly, there might be one or two candidates out there who want to phone in or remind me that they too mentioned this. Almost everybody talked about it as blaming the victim and talked about it as a consequence of addiction and mental illness. And it sort of infuriated me as someone who's been dealing with economics and economic issues for my entire life as a labor person and as you mentioned, as an analyst. And almost no one said, this is about economics. This is about people not having enough money to pay the rent. And the fact that realtors and powerful business interests are essentially robbing the people in this city. And by the way, this is not just a problem of Portland. This is something that happens all across the nation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that was what I wanted to get into. I would say, you know, I did a lot of those interviews talking with people on the campaign trail. And I think you did hear a little bit of that about the housing stock as being one of those things that people wanted to point to as a cause, and the price of rent, but not necessarily taking it to what you take it to in this piece, which is wages. Talk to me about that.
And when you mentioned people talking about housing stock, it was, oh, we have to build a lot more housing,
right?
Which, you know, sure, everybody's for that, but it wasn't about, look, it's too expensive to rent a place. And as I said in the piece, in order to rent a two-bedroom modest place in Portland, the minimum wage should be, and I'll halt and let your listeners think about what the answer would be. You know, we'll go one, two, three. It needs to be $39 an hour. And the minimum wage in this city, the city metro minimum wage, is $15.95. Now, we take great pride in that because the federal minimum wage is an outrageous, immoral $7.25, and it's been stuck at that since 2009. So what we're dealing with on a regular daily basis is the robbery on the part of businesses, on the part of corporations. They're robbing the people's sweat of the brow, and people are not getting a fair compensation. They're not getting fair wages. And that translates directly into the inability to pay the rent. And as I say in the pieces, as you know, there were a lot of people who said, you know, we need to go and examine mental addiction centers and look at mental health, and we have to improve those services, of course. But really where you really wanted to go was you wanted to go to the picket lines in this city and go to the picket lines at New Seasons, at Fred Meyer, at the folks at OHSU, at the Water Bureau, at Boeing, and you just go down the line. Those are the folks who are struggling every day to make the rent because they are not getting paid a fair wage. And this is the crisis in our country. If you go to a 50,000-foot level view, and then we'll come back to your questions, it's really at the heart of almost every economic issue that we look at. whether it be housing, the ability to just pay your regular bills. And I believe it's one of the reasons I'm a huge labor supporter. I have been my whole life a labor activist. Unless we change that notion of people being able to get a fair wage, and the mayor doesn't seem to be tuned into this at all. I think that's partly because he's a businessman, doesn't think about that. We're not going to solve this problem.
Where do you think that, like, why do you suppose it is that wages are not brought into the conversation more frequently? Why is that hung up somewhere along the line?
So let's separate the regular folks in the street and perhaps candidates, political people running for office. Maybe we'll start with the second group, because I like to pick on them a little bit, especially. You know, I would break candidates, the people I knew, and it isn't just in this city, into two groups. There's the folks who just don't know. And I think that comes from the quality of candidates that we have. And I think it actually speaks to the anger that we saw in the recent election, the national election, where you see it everywhere. People don't trust politicians because politicians just blather the same stuff that they hear on TV or that they've been educated when they went to college and took economics 101 classes. And they believe in the glory of the free market. And then they carry that into their campaign. So I can't tell you how much I heard the people leading with the notion that the problem in the city was we have to do something to help small business. I'm sorry, with all due respect to to small business, that isn't the problem in the city. I think of the problem as what's happening to most people, and the problem is they're not earning enough money. The second problem is that we have candidates who are just careerists, and the vast majority of the people in this campaign, I shouldn't say the vast majority, a big chunk of them are just careerists and wanted to be elected. And they just groveled. They just, on their hands and knees, were just groveling to get the support of business, in particular United for Portland, which was this PAC that represented the polluters, the anti-union businesses. They didn't ever disclose who those people were. In fact, they refused directly to tell me and another candidate who their members were, because they were trying to hide that, in my opinion. But candidates were desperate to get their support, including the current city council president. And they were just groveling big business. And so they don't want to talk about that, because to do that, you have to confront the elites in the city. To do that, you have to confront those people who are robbing the people who aren't paying fair wages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, to that point, I pulled a quote that I particularly liked from the piece. You write, quote, "Having a serious discussion about the dynamics of homelessness means confronting the people who run our city, the elites, the wealthy, and the business leaders who foster homelessness by robbing people of the fruits of their labor." Are there particular examples that you think of in terms of that dynamic that you outline?
In terms of those employers, I mean, as I mentioned, the picket lines that I've been on, that I always am proud to be on. And in fact, I've been on the picket line for New Seasons workers the last few days. There's an unfair labor practice strike going on right now. The management at the Arbor Lodge store fired a 19-year veteran employee, Randy, and I'm just blanking on his last name.
Foster,
I apologize.
I think.
You're correct. Thank you very much. And he's a union activist. And so there has been an unfair labor practice strike, meaning people walked out in support of Randy because it was an illegal firing. And that will have to be arbitrated. Now that strike has spread to a couple of other stores. So you look at New Seasons, those folks don't get paid enough. You can look at the strike that was at Boeing that I think that people know that was out on Sandy. OHSU is another great example. They were about to lay off 500 people. I went to the board of directors meeting to protest that. It's been almost a year, I think. And there were people who stood up in the audience at this board of directors meeting and said that if you lay me off, I'm going to be homeless. I'm going to have to sleep in my car. Now, I'm glad you asked this question, because I think we think of people who aren't being paid enough wages as either working part-time or working for the minimum wage. These are folks who have full-time jobs at OHSU. It's true about our city workers. And that's the travesty that we face in this country. We have people who are working 40 hours plus. They're working full-time jobs doing, we could not run the city without these folks, and they cannot afford to pay the rent. They can't afford to pay their full bills that are in front of them every single month. So that's a few examples.
Yeah. Well, I want to also just mention, these weren't in your piece, but some recent statistics that have come out to kind of support some of these ideas. A study that was provided to state lawmakers last week showed that half of all Portland renters are rent burden, meaning that they pay more than 30% of their wages towards their rent. And there was an interesting study that came out today talking about, you know, in the metro area, but kind of the suburbs around Portland, that actually the cost of living has surpassed homelessness in terms of something that folks are most concerned about or most wanting to do something about. Is that a trend that you expect to continue?
Yes. And when I went to, on the issue of people not being able to afford the bills, which is, I think, what your point was. One of the things that I've tried to do when I knocked on doors is, even in the wealthier areas or the better off areas, and I want to be careful how I define that, but in certain neighborhoods where you can tell that people are doing better, I didn't change my message. And the reason was, I wanted to knock on the doors of people who are doing well and said, you should want people to have better wages. You should want people to be able to afford the rent. You should want people to get paid much more, because when that doesn't happen, when people are struggling, that affects your entire society. And you may not see it right away, but if you want a vibrant society, if you want a place where people can feel good about the city they live in, even people who are doing better should want that to happen. And they should be, for example, very supportive of labor and unions, because it's always been shown that when unions do well, the entire society does well. Unions raise the wages and raise all boats. And I tried to keep that message very consistent no matter who I spoke to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of answers this question that I did want to ask about, you know, whenever talk about raising the minimum wage comes up, there's a lot of pushback and kind of kerfuffle, and centering a rhetoric around this idea of a small business owner who won't be able to pay their workers anymore. Do you think that's the right conversation to be having about that? Or is there like a different frame?
Well, the first thing, if your listeners didn't take anything away except for the following point, I'll be thrilled. It is not true. I'm going to say it again. It is not true that the minimum wage causes a disaster in the economy for small businesses and businesses. Every study that's been done, you can go back to a study done by someone named Card when the minimum wage was raised in New Jersey. This was probably 20, 25 years ago. And then shoot forward to a study that was done at the University of Berkeley when they raised the minimum wage in California. There's a little bit of change in some situations. But overall, when you look at the course of 5 or 10 years, there's very little impact on jobs. And let's face it, it's even better for society because people are being paid more. You know, it's like pretty basic economics. People have to have enough money in their pockets so they can pay the bills. Now, I know that there's a lot of challenges with consumerism and buying too much. That's a huge impact on our planet and climate change, our overconsumption. But the truth is, and I say this to conservative economists, if you want to have a vibrant economy where two-thirds of the spending is consumer spending, you have to make sure the people earn enough so that they can buy your you-know-what. Can I use that word on this?
Your you-know-what? Yeah,
you-know-what.
Keep it at you-know-what.
I stopped because I knew I couldn't. I didn't want the FCC to come down on you and fine you or something like that. But I have a potty mouth, so I have to always restrain myself.
Yes, restrain yourself. Well, so, I mean, your argument in this piece is, of course, that, you know, it is tied to wages. From what you've seen going on at the new City Hall, I mean, they've been in there for a month now. Do you think there's an appetite to tackle homelessness from this angle of wages?
Well, I can only say what I see in the press is that the mayor doesn't seem to get it. And I actually was texting with him sometime after the election. I texted him and said, Keith, you have to have a wage strategy. He replied, I can show it to you afterwards. Agreed. But there's been no wage strategy coming from the mayor's office about how to raise the minimum wage. And of course, the minimum wage would have to be raised statewide. So Portland would have to go, Portland legislators as a whole would have to go to the state legislature, or we would have to have a ballot measure to do that, ballot initiative. in terms of the council itself, there's a few people. I would mention Tiffany Koyama-Lane, who's the vice president, who I have a lot of respect for, who I think is a solid, she's a union member, a teacher. I think she understands that, but I don't hear the conversation that this is our number one priority. This has to be our number one priority, making sure that people earn enough money in the city, because you're not going to change the overall nature of what's happening to people. And I'm thinking of the working person, because that's what I care about the most. You're not going to change that without raising the minimum wage. And of course, broad unionization. I've heard no conversation about that, at least publicly. I'm sure they're having private conversations about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you definitely hear some chatter about the cost of living and concern about that, but often coming from the angle of we need to cut taxes, we need to decrease tax burden, stop scaring people off with taxes and things like that.
That drives me up the wall. That's mindless. And we have a governor who is completely clueless about this, who says that she's not going to be, I think there's now a moratorium, if I'm not mistaken, I don't remember, three years.
Something like that. No, there is a moratorium.
We're not going to raise taxes. Well, come on. There are very wealthy people, and I'm working on something, which I don't want to talk about on the radio today, about that, a ballot initiative about that. And that is just mindless. And it's a national problem. And politicians, because they want corporate donors, and partly it's partly that, but even if you got rid of money in politics, as some people advocate, and say we're going to have all publicly financed campaigns, people still believe this. It's an ideology that someone like Tina Kotek and others have been brought up on and raised on about the free market. And to me, free market capitalism is at the heart of the crisis in this country. The reason we have poverty, the reason people are homeless and people can't afford the bills, and on, is because of the free market system. And if we don't attack that, and if we say all these people are making money hand over fist, like Phil Knight, don't have to pay more, that's just foolish.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I did want to get into, there is another piece that definitely tackles this national political angle. It's from your Working Life Substack. It's called Oligarchy and Debt, a Love Story. I wonder if you wouldn't mind talking us through it's a good title, talking us through the thesis of that piece.
Thank you. And people can subscribe to my Substack for free. I mean, if you want to become a subscriber for $50 a year, that's fine. I mean, this is a station that does pitches, so you know, I'll be gross about that. Yes, I write a lot. I've been writing. It's called Working Life. It's a Substack newsletter. So one of the things, I actually wrote a book about this, I guess it's about 20 years ago, about the false nature of the debt discussion. We do not have a crisis of debt in this country. And part of that is because, at least to date, the United States prints its own money. The dollar is still the currency for the globe. So there's not like people knocking on our door like other countries who often get into debt issues, and then the World Bank comes in, or the International Monetary Fund comes in and says, we're only going to give you money if you invoke austerity in your country. That's happened around in Argentina and other countries over the last 30 years. I believe that we should have debt forgiveness around the world to solve part of the poverty that we see in the globe. So in our country, we don't have a debt problem. What we have is a question of priorities. So isn't it interesting, Althea, that when it comes to the Pentagon budget, there's never a debt problem, right? Nobody says, wait a minute, we can't buy more bombers and submarines. There's plenty of money for that. And we're approaching in the next few years $1 trillion Pentagon budget. On the other hand, when it comes to Medicaid or things that people need, all of a sudden there's a debt problem. And that's really the debate that we're having right now, or that's the Republicans in particular are trying to push. And honestly, Democrats are as at fault in this respect as well, because they buy into this debt crisis issue. And they say, oh, yes, we need to solve it. And I think the problem that we have when we start talking about that is it scares people. Because if you're an individual sitting at home and you can't pay your bills, you say, oh, yeah, look at the government. They can't pay their bills either. It's not the same thing. The reason you can't pay your bills at the kitchen table is because you're not being paid enough. There is no debt problem from the government standpoint. And going back to what we just talked about with Tina Kotek and the foolishness of not raising taxes on the wealthy, we could solve this tomorrow if we had serious tax reform that imposed serious taxes on the wealthy, including a wealth tax. You could get rid of that debt almost overnight. So it's not what I just to wrap it up, what I wrote about in that piece was I went through, this was a shorthand, I went through and explained why there is no debt problem and that there's a simple solution, that what we have to have is a debate about our priorities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and you connect it to oligarchy as well, which, yep, I don't know if you saw in the days right after Trump was inaugurated, there was a big spike in the interest in people searching for the word oligarchy on Google and maybe encountering it for the first time. And for some folks, the nature of American oligarchy is being laid more bare in the second Trump term than it has in the past. But that's not, you know, where it originates, of course.
And if you are, as I am, a follower of Bernie Sanders for all these years, I was proud to be a national delegate for him twice and also a national surrogate for him in 2015 and 2016. Bernie talks about oligarchy almost when he wakes up in the morning. He has his cup of coffee and the first thing out of his mouth is oligarchy. Yes. And so an example of that is that oligarchs don't pay their taxes. And almost every instance of where you see the shortfall in money is due to oligarchy. And you can go down, then you can look at the question of how they basically control the labor market, right? That's the oligarchy controls our ability to make a living. And so that's the oppressive part of oligarchy as well. But their influence on debt is essentially that they want to get rid of everything that we value, that the people value and that we need. And they don't want to pay fair taxes.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope folks take away from this Substack piece that we've been talking about and the opinion piece that you wrote for the Mercury?
I guess a few things. One is that we have to be quite aware and dig. It's hard in our daily life. Let's put it this way. I understand this. It's difficult in our daily life when we hear the rubbish on television, if you watch mainstream television, which unfortunately I do, and you hear the so-called experts pouring out this idea of the free market and American exceptionalism. And isn't this great that we have this wonderful economy? And I just think we have to be more aggressive about challenging that, both in our own minds and a little bit in the public sphere, at your dinner table, with your relatives. And it doesn't have to be, as I mentioned before, it doesn't have to be partisan, because I think Democrats and Republicans are at fault, Republicans more, because they represent the worst of the worst. But Democrats have been at fault as well. So we can do this conversation in a nonpartisan way. The second thing I'll say is, I do believe that part of the way we deal with wages and challenging oligarchy is through unions. Mm-hmm. And I would really encourage people, if you hear about a picket line, I'm sure many of your listeners, this is a station that I'm sure many of your listeners walk picket lines, so great on you all. I can't finish this conversation without also thanking the Portland Mercury for publishing this piece. I love the fact that they have the courage to have that conversation, have that voice. So thank you to Courtney, particularly at the Portland Mercury. And the third thing is, I guess I'll be radical about this. I do believe we need to have a general strike. And my own union, I'm a proud UAW member. I've been a UAW member since 1992. My own union president, Sean Fain, has talked about having a general strike on May 1st, 2028. The American Federation of Teachers, their actual national convention, passed a resolution to join in that general strike. I don't think we should wait. I mean, I think we have to organize a general strike for all the reasons that everybody is aware of what's happening in this country, but certainly around the wages and the theft that's been happening in this country. It's not easy to do. It takes a lot of planning and coordination, but we need to do it for the good of the people.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for stopping by KB News In Depth and chatting with me.
It was great. It's always great to be here. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Well, that was Jonathan Tessini, a longtime labor and progressive organizational and economic strategist. You might also know him from running for city council in District 2. We've been speaking about his opinion piece published in the Portland Mercury last month called Homelessness is Economics. We can't have a serious conversation about homelessness until we address wages. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings. Stay tuned for Labor Radio up next.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.